later on this episode.
Many times as an entrepreneur, I've gotten caught up with the trees, right? And when I take my head up and look at the forest, things become much clearer. It happened in 2013, happened in 2015, it's happening again in 2017. And by the way, by looking at the forest again, you may think first time the forest is a great, gigantic, big forest. The next time you look at it, it feels like a circle. The third time you see it, no, it isn't just a circle. It is a perfect circle with three arcs and two cylindricals. And each of that gives you new insight that allows you to grow things. So
originality.
My name is Nick Singh.
Welcome to Autographs. My name is Nick Singh. And just know, originality is on the horizon. Let's go. What's cooking, good lookins? This is Nick Sang. I'm your host of this episode, well, of all episodes of Autographs. If you're new here, welcome. If you're returning, thanks for being here. Today's episode, I was just reviewing it, was done a few years ago with a gentleman by the name of Manish Chandra. And if you don't know Manish, he founded this neat company called Poshmark. And at the time, I hadn't heard of Poshmark. So if you don't know what it is the number one website in the world for selling and buying high fashion. So it's like the eBay of high fashion. So if you have something that is Louis V or Tom Ford or anything that's considered high fashion, you can buy it and sell it like you would on eBay on Poshmark. And there's a huge audience for it. And, you know, the beginning of this interview, it starts off with kind of understanding the nuances to his business. And eventually it gets to a point where I just didn't want it to end, because Manish started talking about these deep spiritual ways of viewing and looking at life and solving problems that resonated with me really deep. And the more I live life and the more I go through things, the more I realize the benefit in having some kind of spiritual foundation to my life and to life in general. And it's something that I've noticed that really successful people almost always have. There are individuals who don't necessarily practice a form of spirituality and are very scientific in the way that they live, and they've done great things and they've achieved lots. So you don't need this, I would say. But for me, it's been the biggest hack to actually feeling fulfilled as I achieve things. And hearing Manish speak on some of the ways that he spiritually looks at things to solve problems was not only inspiring, but confirming, in that it helped me feel like I should continue down this path of looking at life through a spiritual lens in a lot of ways, because that has helped me more than a lot of other things have. So if you get anything from this conversation, I hope that you stick around for, and this is not a hook for you to just listen to the whole episode, I promise. We just happened to talk about it near the end, and we referenced my favorite book called The Alchemist. As it turns out, he's read it too. So I'll let you folks listen to the episode. I hope you enjoy it. My name is Nick Sang. You're now listening to Autographs. And also, if by the end of this you really like it, I'd hope that you leave a rate and a review and a subscribe, or you share it wherever you get your podcasts. That'd be awesome. So anyways, folks, I'll talk to you soon. Peace. How's your talk?
It was good.
Yeah, did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah.
Wicked, man.
I was just telling, I said last time I was here, I think I was watching a concert on stage. So
oh,
I'm feeling a little bit
nervous.
Yeah.
It's funny how one time you're off stage and the next time you're
on
stage.
Yeah.
It's hard to predict in this world, eh? Mm-hmm. It's really hard. But, you know, I'm curious, right? I just want to go deep into it and just kind of get right in, if you don't mind, which is this. I mean, you run an incredible online commerce thing. I mean, I would really call it e-commerce for the most part. And I wanted to touch this first because I want to get the business stuff out of the way. It's always best to get the business out of the way first. And here it is. So many people are going toward e-commerce now because I'm sure you know this, but in 2016 or in 2017, the first quarter of 2017, more online or more brick and mortar stores shut down than in the entirety of 2016, right? So everything is actually shifting online, and it's so interesting, the trend. So I have a lot of friends who are obviously doing Amazon drop shipping, right? Amazon selling, eBay selling, all this stuff. And
you're in e-commerce and you're incredibly successful with it, but you didn't go that traditional route, right? I call it the kind of the Levi story, you know, Levi jeans. When everybody was going out to look for gold, Levi Strauss, the generator of Levi jeans in the 1800s, he decided that he wanted to give everybody the pants. That would they go, and when they came back, they kept on buying the pants, even if they didn't make gold. And that's how Levi's grew. That's how it started. And even the guy selling the shovels made more money than most people.
Right.
So it's almost like, I know it's a weird example, but I see you in the same realm because everybody's going and doing drop shipping and Amazon and stuff like that. But here you are developing a really unique e-commerce platform. And most people might have said in your early years, oh, that's too much like eBay. That's too much like this. That's too much like that. You're not going to win, but you're winning. And I'm really curious as to what your thought is on running west while everybody's running east in this whole e-commerce realm that we're living in right now.
Sure. So my insight actually came 8 or 9 years back when I was building my previous company, Caboodle, which was sort of more like Pinterest today, which is a social media sort of platform where people were sharing and collecting. And the key insight I had was that really one of the challenges in scaling a business online around fashion is a challenge of discovery. And discovery is a hard problem to crack because to really do scalable discovery, you have to do it through people. And that's how we've actually done it in real life, but it's very hard to simulate that online. So that was sort of one hard problem. The second hard problem was in order to scale fashion online, you needed access to massive amounts of inventory. And then the third thing was, in order for those two things to work, you needed a very, very efficient logistics systems. And I looked around, nobody was focused on these problems and nobody was really interpreting them. And then the iPhone 4 shipped in 2010. And I looked at that piece of technology and I said, this is going to be the right piece of technology, which is going to bring all of these pieces together. Nobody believed me at that time. If I hadn't had success with another company, I wouldn't have been able to raise money, right? And so then I had a partnership with an investor who believed in me early. He believed in me more than even the idea at that time, but also believed in the fact that my idea would have legs because of my interpretation. And then today, you know, when mobile, social, brick and mortar melting down, we are sort of hitting multiple points of inflection. But the first 3 years were incredibly hard because there were so many problems we had to solve and everything was not solved.
Very interesting. So now that you're here, right, I mean, kind of scaling toward the present, and you're still operating in this e-commerce space and you're one of the beneficiaries of it, which I totally honor and I love because I think, why not, right? What would you recommend for anybody who's really looking to delve into this kind of space, but I don't know, doesn't necessarily have the resources that you have or the drive or the passion, but wants to take a part of e-commerce? What would you recommend for them? Or would you go totally left field and just say, if you don't have a drive for it, don't touch it? It doesn't matter if it's winning.
Well, it depends upon the scale of business you want to create. So one of my beliefs is that any business, any idea you have, you can execute to it any point in time. It's just how you sort of look at the world at that point in time and interpret it. The second belief I have is that any idea is a massive idea. It's just that at the beginning, it may or may not be appearing to you, you know. So when I sort of say, you look at a coffee cup, right? We were just talking about coffee a few minutes back. You could just think of it as a drink. You could think that from coffee, I could, you know, join a coffee shop and do the job and sort of be a barista, or I could create a cup of coffee, or I could create a kiosk, or I could create a coffee store, or I could create a coffee shop, I could create maybe a couple of coffee shops. But then somebody looked at the coffee cup and said, hey, I'm gonna create a Starbucks, right? What is Starbucks today?
It's
a community engine. It's really a place where community meets. And the person who visualized it said that, you know, in order to bring this community and give them this amazing product, I have to charge the much maligned $3.85 latte, which has been in so many consumer frugonomic books. But you needed that in order for that community to sustain. And now that model has become massive and there's so many things that happen. So to me, I would say, take your dream and interpret it in the reality of today. Figure out what the first step to take is, second step to take it, and then keep reimagining the future so it becomes something that you have the gumption to create. So I would say there's really no time like the present to take that first step. And don't imagine that you have to get to the 100th mile in your first step. Think of just taking that first step.
I love that. And I love you use Starbucks as an example because I've never thought about it like that in my whole life. Everybody's brewing coffee, said, I'm gonna sell coffee. But it wasn't until somebody came along and said, this is how I'm gonna sell coffee. And I've never, ever in my whole life heard that what Starbucks really is. It's a community meeting place. And it's totally right. That's where even I have my meetings. That's where I go to do work. That's what I value out of Starbucks. It's not the coffee. I don't care, right? Their drinks and stuff are good, but that's what it is. And it's really neat that you said that. So to hear that philosophy is really, it's nice, right? It's refreshing and it's new. So to kind of take it off business for a moment, I would love to hear more about your philosophy around giving, right? I really feel that what you've done is you've kind of, I remember reading into your story a bit, there were things in people's closet, it was your wife's closet, right? That she wore once, didn't wear at all, something like that, right? Or
yep.
Wore maybe twice and throughout. You found value in the things that people wore twice and never wore again. And you said, these have merit, these have value, we can sell these online. And you found that. And what was your, going into that, was your philosophy, okay, we're gonna make a crap ton of money doing this? Or was it, you know what, I just want to be able to give people this experience and the ability to make some money of their own, and then whatever I get from it is fine. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But what was your kind of theory going into that?
See, to me, what I loved about my Caboodle journey, there was, you know, amazing technology we built, you know, there was money that happened, was really the power of the people. And so my perspective is that really my ability is combining technology with how you empower people and enabling them to do new things. So if you think of what we did with Poshmark and where we are going with it, is we are re-changing a very sort of stale and stodgy business, which is fashion, and reinterpreting with people. And while the initial reinterpretation is for empowering them to sell what they have, but the way the platform was built from day one and the platform where it's going is it also empowers them to sell new things, and then it also empowers them to create new fashion brands. And by distributing that power, and then also at the same time, not only are we sort of focused on making it super scalable, we are also making it super scalable for every individual and celebrating every individual. So it is really a very humanizing way to kind of scale things, where you not only are making money or sort of growing things and actually finding use for stuff you have, but you also feel the love. And to me, that is what's missing today, is that there are many things we do which make us feel small, and our goal is to make everyone feel big.
I love that. And I think it's amazing that you're able to bring that out of people, because when they feel big, I feel like, yeah, they're actually really adhering to their true nature, and you're really bringing out what's real inside of them and the best. And to be able to do that through a platform like what you had is amazing. So looking back at it on hindsight, because you're pretty far down, right, in your journey, I would say. I mean, farther than most get, which is incredible, and there's still so much to go. But looking back at it all in a hindsight perspective, tell me about maybe sometimes when you think, oh my goodness, right? I just wish I knew that. I wish I knew that before. Like, why didn't I know this? Talk to me about a wish I knew moment that you've had maybe recently, or a big one.
Oh,
that
so many, so many things I would say. But the big one that comes to me is that how, by looking at our own business and are looking at our own data, we've been able to reinterpret that business. So the same business, which in short period feels very noisy when you look at information, when you look at it over a longer period of time, it feels much more rhythmic and information. So it's kind of like, many times as an entrepreneur, I've gotten caught up with the trees, right? And when I take my head up and look at the forest, things become much clearer. It happened in 2013, happened in 2015, it's happening again in 2017. And by the way, by looking at the forest again, you may think first time the forest is a great, gigantic, big forest. The next time you look at it, it feels like a circle. The third time you see it, no, it isn't just a circle. It is a perfect circle with three arcs and two cylindricals. And each of that gives you new insight that allows you to grow things. So, you know, what I have sort of learned and what I wish I knew is that, and it's sort of a spiritual answer, which is that most of the answers are actually embedded inside what you're looking at. And sometimes when you're sort of facing a conundrum or a problem, you're not looking at the problem in the right way. And you need to either find a person who can guide you or somebody. And every time you do that, you can actually rethink that problem and grow it faster. So for example, in 2013, we were going through this thing and we made a decision to really take certain things which have turned out to be good decisions. But when we were doing it, it felt very traumatic, right? Now when I look at the data 5 years later, it was kind of like a zero risk decision that we took. But at that time, it felt very, very thing. And the information that it was a zero risk decision was actually available to us, but we never bothered to look at it.
Wow.
And so I would say that quite often people are looking outside for answers, you know, what trend is going on, what's happening. But in fact, in their brains and in their hearts is the answer to many of their things. They just don't have
access.
Enough of a confidence or enough of sort of a belief in themselves to trust it. So I just, you know, I hope I can do it to people, and I hope more people do it to me, is constantly sort of just giving you that belief in yourself.
That's amazing. And how do you access that? I mean, how do you access that level of intellect, that level of intelligence, that knowledge, those truths, so that you can start trusting it? I feel like access might be a big thing for people, because I've had people tell me, listen to your heart, follow your gut. But at times it's like, oh, frick, my gut's saying this. But at the same time, it's saying like something completely opposite. And it's really just the mind playing tricks on you at that point. But what's your experience been in accessing those truths?
Well, I think the first time it happened, where I was more conscious about it, I think in an implicit sense, we always access these things as we're growing up, was, you know, was a book. And it's a book, in fact, I recently gave out to every single person in the company called The Alchemist. And you might have read
it. My favorite book. Yeah. I've read it 5 times.
Yes.
I've never read a book in my life that many times. So cool.
And so so to me, that's like, and then there's many variations of it and many ways that that book and the lesson it is reinterpreted. But, you know, if you look at it, it's about a belief system. It's about sort of a focus. But it's also about the belief system that what you want is actually already available to you. It's a matter of tapping into it. And I think a lot of people sort of have that belief and sort of have a consistency. Even people that we may like or we may not like, you know, all great people. And so I feel like it's that sort of realization. And it's about reinforcing it, experiencing it, and then sort of building on it, and then, which is not to say you'll ever be perfect, because all of us get into our dark modes. We all sort of have those really dark moments, those down moments, and then you come out of it. The second thing I think which is really important is to have consciously always seek out people around you who can be your guides. And they keep changing, because at different points in time you need different guides. And that second part is also, they're an alchemist, right? Because the alchemist itself changes forms. And so to me, that second part is something which I always interpreted, that if my company is not growing, is because I'm not growing as an individual, as a founder or CEO. So I have to constantly be growing myself.
That is amazing. And the fact that you reference my favorite book of all time, The Alchemist, you call
it. Oh, wow, we already have a connection then.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly,
so.
Right? Definitely kindred souls, yes, I would say. Yeah. So here's the last one. I asked you the wish you knew question, right? Mm-hmm. So out of the wish, I'm really curious. I want to go left field. I want to just throw things out there and just do something different than any of the other questions, which is, what was your oh shit moment? You know, what was the moment when you just go, oh shit, like, oh shit, I just screwed up or something went wrong and now I need to fix it, right? And all the odds are stacked, like, all the odds are ultimately stacked against you, and you just have to find a way to overcome. And you just go, and I'm sure it happens.
Yeah,
it
happened many times. I would say one of the earlier ones was go back to 2013. It was a very pivotal year. Was we just started to ramp up marketing, and we were sort of scaling the business. And I was, you know, at one of our live events, people were telling me these problems are happening. I couldn't believe it, and you know, they were showing me, and I came back and we're talking to our CTO. And we realized that basically one out of two users who were trying to access the service was being shut down because our systems were not scaling. And we didn't even know it.
Oh my
we didn't have any reporting. That means basically half the marketing dollars, half sort of the money was going to waste.
Wasted.
And it was like a truly oh shit moment, as you would say. It was really a crazy time.
Wow.
And it came in a discussion, actually, with, I was talking to one of my co-founders, CTO was one of my co-founders, and he was talking to Tracy, who was another co-founder, and the three of us was discussing, and then Chetan, who was a fourth co-founder, came around, and we were just batting around it. And that's when sort of this joint realization came to us.
My goodness. Manish, or is it Manish?
Manish.
Manish?
Yeah.
Manish, this has been honestly incredible. It's been so fun, and I feel like we're just kindred spirits here. So thank you for your time. And I'd like to shake your hand and just thank you.
Great, thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
Do you mind if I get a picture with you?
No, absolutely.
That's terrific, man.